Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in. What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 231. After one of the best nights of basketball in recent NBA history. Also, you know, I was feeling some type of way this morning. That's a gut-wrenching loss. There are two teams in the NBA that I have a personal connection to. The Sixers and the Lakers, where I have a real personal relationship to either people on the team or running the team or involved in the team. And they both lost last night in excruciating fashion. So, not shockingly, if you know me, little trouble sleeping, had those dreams that you have typically when, like, you're kind, at least for me, when you're making bad decisions in life, or your life is like spiraling out of control, or you're worried it might be, like you're driving a car and you don't have control of the car and it just keeps accelerating. I used to have those dreams all the time when I was a maniac. I didn't have those exact dreams. Instead, I had like the adult version of like super angsty, hard to sleep dreams because I love sports. There are a couple teams I really root for on a personal and professional level, and they both had their guts ripped out last night. So we'll get into all of that. But I want to say something to you, the listeners, because I got a smile this morning when I walked in to Trentage, where we do the podcast, and someone had slipped through the grate of the, you know, the gate, a letter. I thought it was a letter. It says, I'll hold it up right here. It says, Nick Wright, Trentage, with the address of the store. And it's a letter from Dallas, from, I guess, I'm not going to give their last name, but Trey and Dalen, or Dylan, I apologize, I think it's Dalen. And what it is, and I'll cover up the important info, is a wedding invitation to a wedding in Dallas that is in a few weeks that they know I can't go to because I said months ago, I'm the best type of person to invite to your wedding because I won't go, but I'll send a gift. So Trey and Dalen, when you get those air tags that were on your registry, they're from your buddy Nick Wright. I saw the nice little 4-pack of air tags. They actually, I even did same day delivery. You'll get them today. And
that's awesome.
Pro tip, if I don't know Trey and Dalen, because I don't know you people, if you have a dog or a pet, get for their collar an air tag holder and put the air tag on it. Because microchipping dogs is not GPSing dogs. It's just microchipping them. Someone's still got to find the dog. So you don't ever have to worry. So if you ever, years from now, your dog runs away and you're able to find him, it'll be because you listened to my advice from months ago, which was, hey, invite me to a wedding. If I'm, you know, in a good mood or even just, you know, feeling like I want to do something nice or lost enough money betting on the Lakers money line last night, my first bet since the Super Bowl, that I'm like, yeah, what's another $100? Go ahead and do it. I was so confident the Lakers were going to win. I'm out here buying DeMonte great seats to tonight's Clippers-Mavs game. Wish I could rescind that transaction. I'm feeling they're up 20.
Thanks,
I'm like, I got this at plus 280. Oh, my God. I don't need the points. The Lakers got this, and it was all going according to plan until, of course, it wasn't. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the Sixers, and we'll get to what is a legitimate changing of the guard in the NBA, which I think is actually the most interesting thing happening in this postseason, and I don't think anyone has quite explained how stark it is. We'll do that here in the next 20 minutes or so, but first, here's what missed the cut. Ben Stiller dresses as Kelly Oubre. Tom Brady's getting roasted on Netflix, and Travis Kelce evidently has two songs on the new Taylor Swift album. I love Travis. I'm happy for him and Taylor. I don't know enough about music to know anything about Taylor Swift's new album, but that's fine. DeMonte, let's get to the actual, you know, events that matter here.
Yes, the Lakers threw everything that they had at the Nuggets. You got great minutes from Anthony Davis and LeBron James. D'Angelo Russell started off the game 5-for-5 from the three-point, but still came down to a final shot from Jamal Murray, unfortunately.
Yeah.
With all the premature gloating that you did, do you think you feel partly responsible for their loss?
No. So before we get to anything else, let's talk about why the Lakers lost. So let me on the front end say the biggest reason the Lakers lost. The biggest reason the Lakers lost is because, and I understand Rui had a rough game. That's not it, though. I'm not going to do that. And I know some folks feel like I'm not even, like, allowed to have this opinion because of my previous opinions, but if you can't be presented with mountains of new evidence and then change how you feel about things, then why exist in the world? Then why, you know, to watch things, read things, learn things, whatever. The biggest reason the Lakers lost that game is because Jokic is that dude, man. I thought Anthony Davis played an awesome game. And Joker damn near had a 30-20-10. You look disconcerted by what I said, DeMonte.
He definitely is, and he just does some stuff that you've never seen before.
There's just no and right Remember because the, I was like, oh, AD's
shot the, clock the, running so down. The dude threw it off the glass like to his teammate, and I think it was planned.
I don't know, so I don't that part I don't think was planned, but I think he was smart enough to know I've got to just get it up and then see what happens. Like nothing worse is going to happen.
He's
so
amazing.
there are. So the A1 reason is right now the Nuggets have the guy. And when you have the guy, even when Jamal Murray going into that final shot is 8 of 23, even when D'Lo is cooking, even when AD is having a great game and LeBron is having an old school old school, and by the way, I evidently texted. I sent the wrong text. I sent a text to the group chat that I didn't. Never mind. I didn't send a text to the group chat. Our group chat found the wedding website for the people I sent the gift
registry.
To,
I
but
saw.
We'll keep that private. So as I was saying, even when LeBron, I thought, had a great game and paced himself well. Like to where he was just distributing early, so he had more in the tank late. Did all of that when the Nuggets cut it to 2. LeBron hit back-to-back threes, then had those big-time drives at the end of the game, and it wasn't enough because Jokic's greatness kept Denver in the game. And then so the first reason is something the Nuggets did: employ Nikola Jokic. The second reason is. And this is when, if you had bet on the Lakers, if you're rooting for the Lakers, if you were being honest, you were nervous. that second half of the third quarter was utterly disastrous again. Second straight game, they got annihilated in the second half of the third quarter, stopped running offense. After it seemed like that LeBron AD high pick and roll, there was no answer for it. They went away from it. And after the Lakers went up 74-65 at the 7:15 mark, here are the Lakers' offensive possessions. Rui missed three. AD missed three. AD turnover. Rui missed dunk. AD missed putback. D'Lo missed three. LeBron missed two. AD turnover. Gabe Vincent missed three. AD missed jumper. AD offensive foul turnover, which was the key moment. So from that 7 minute mark to 2:40 mark, the Lakers had eight possessions, maybe nine there, got 0 points, and at the end of it, Anthony Davis picked up his fourth foul, which then made AD have to go to the bench, and then Jokic did literally whatever he wanted. And so even then, the Lakers were able to score at the end of that quarter because LeBron came back in, D'Lo hit a three, LeBron made some free throws. Every possession the Nuggets had, they're scoring. Because when AD went to the bench, Joker was unstoppable. So instead of it being a 16 or 18 point lead at the end of the third, it's only 10. And then one other sequence, and then we'll get to LeBron's complaints about the officiating. One other sequence that is, you know, it's just what basketball is, but man, oh man, it can be painful. LeBron has the steal burst dunk, which is one of the dopest plays an old guy in sports has ever made. A guy his age at that point in the game, 1 point game, minute and a half left, sniff out the pass, have the burst, get there. I thought he might be going to get hung on the rim. Guy's 39 year, 21, and was on fumes. Got it.
Jammed it.
And then, and I tweeted out this clip. Joker then, the game footage doesn't get you right back in the play, but by the time you see back in the play, Joker is trying to draw a three-shot foul and just kind of chucks it at the rim. Doesn't get the call, and the ball is careening out of bounds. And Aaron Gordon saves it, falling out of bounds, and hits MPJ. And MPJ hits the three, and all of a sudden it's a tie game. So that, you know, that sequence right there, if just that ball goes out of bounds, the Lakers win the game. If they only get a two instead of a three, everything's different. So I understand, yes, LeBron missed the three to go up three. If anybody on television, radio, podcast, anything is taking anything away from that game in relation to LeBron's play, we can talk about his comments in a moment. That's like, oh, didn't come through. Then you either don't understand the game of basketball or you're actively trolling. You can pick which side you want to be on, but that's not a viable opinion. You can't watch that game and be like, oh, LeBron blew it. LeBron was great in the fourth. Thing is, the Nuggets are better. And what's frustrating for me is people are like, ah, Nick, you picked the Lakers to win. I picked the Lakers to win the series because a lot of my series analysis actually was correct. And it just hasn't mattered yet. I said that LeBron would be better in fourth quarters than he was in the first series. Just that one fourth quarter last night alone was better than all his fourth quarters combined. I said Jamal Murray was not going to average 32 a night on 55-40 splits. Jamal has had his struggles. I said that D'Lo was not going to be 13% from three. He hit seven last night, and it didn't matter. I mean, it mattered, but it didn't matter. And so it is a painful loss for the Lakers. And it is really interesting to see what their mind frame is going back to LA, because had they won it, they're now like, don't have to win there again. Win our two at home, punt game five, go win game six. Now the path is either, and it is a winnowing path, beat the Nuggets, who have beaten you 10 times in a row, four straight games, or beat the Nuggets four out of five, including a game seven in Denver when games five, six, and seven, I'm sorry, games six and seven are one day apart. That's a very, very thin path. Now, do I think that were the Lakers to get past Denver, they could win the title? I actually do. If Denver is the best team, the Lakers are going blow for blow with them. But sometimes that happens, man. And I was incredibly, and I still am retroactively, as a sports fan, incredibly frustrated by the existence of the KD Warriors, because there were a lot of things I thought that kind of robbed from sports fans. I think LeBron versus Steph going toe-to-toe in those finals year after year should have been kind of the story of that little mini basketball era. And there's a lot of part of it. And I also think Steph versus Durant. I think like those three guys, an aging LeBron, a peaking Steph, and at his apex Durant, those three superheroes all kind of leading their own crews should have been the story of the NBA. It didn't, and it, to me, made the league less exciting for a few years. I don't feel that way at all about Denver, because Denver doesn't feel unfair. Denver doesn't feel like, ah, you had a salary cap spike and you gamed the system. And no. Denver did it the way it's been done in NBA history, which is, guess what? We were fortunate enough to either win a draft lottery, or in their case, have one of the greatest developmental stories in sports history. This mid-second round pick turn into this Goliath. We were smart in how we filled the team out around him. And he's the apex predator of the league right now. Come get him. And folks can say that I make too many things or focus too much on LeBron. I think that what LeBron is doing right now is one of the most remarkable things any of us will ever see in sports. And we'll talk about why that is when we get into the passing of the torch. But this guy at this age, in the biggest game of the year, saying, all right, I'm going to go vintage LeBron, run point, control every aspect of the game, play great defense. There was a spot at the end of the first half when AD had two fouls and the Lakers didn't want to risk AD picking up his third. And LeBron, for four straight possessions, just said, all guard Joker. The fact that that guy is guarding that guy at this stage of his career, we've never seen anything like it, and we won't ever see anything like it again. And yeah, I would have liked if they had gotten the win last night. But it's sports, man. It doesn't always, like, there's the storyline you think you deserve, and then there's the one you get, and such is life. And ties typically go to the team with that dude. For a long time, that meant they went to LeBron's team. Not anymore. Ties now go to Joker's team because he's that guy, and he deserves it. All right, now, DeMonte, we can get to the officiating.
Yes. LeBron basically said that he didn't like the officiating in this game or the last one that they played in. Do you think he's being a sore loser, or is there actually something there?
Well, so let's listen to LeBron's soundbite, and he also talks about the Philly game, I think. Not his last game, but the game earlier in the night. Let's hear it.
D'Lo clearly gets hit in the face on a drive. What the f*** do we have a replay center if it's going to go? It doesn't make sense to me. Makes no sense to me. And then I just saw what happened with the Sixers-Knicks game, too. What are we doing?
Okay, so here's the deal. There's going to be a lot of tweets about, oh my gosh, the LeBron complaining about the officiating. Here's a graph that shows you free throw differential the last 2 years. And the Lakers, okay, just some pure facts. The Lakers did not lead the NBA in free throw attempts this year. They didn't, okay? Orlando did, I think. Let me check to make sure. Yeah, Orlando did. The reason the Lakers have a massive free throw differential is they defend without fouling better than any team in the league but Boston. Okay? So they get a bunch of free throws because they don't shoot a ton of threes. They don't foul a lot because of their style of defense and because, to be honest, LeBron is, as still to this day, either really not defending or just a smart defender. And AD, in my opinion, is the best defensive player in the league. So that leads to the discrepancy. When you actually look at LeBron, when you look at the facts on players who get, you know, X amount of points in the paint or have X amount of drives per game, LeBron, by that metric, gets one of the worst whistles in the league. Now, is Austin Reeves a bit of a foul merchant? Do the Lakers have guys that know how to game it? Sure. But LeBron has not gotten the benefit of a whistle, at least according to the data, ever since he's been with the Lakers. So, what is LeBron's frustration? So, I'm going to give you the micro, and then I'm going to give you the macro. And I promise you, no one else in the world is going to bring up the macro thing, but I have, should I say this? Yeah, okay, I'll say this. I have, in the last 6 months, talked with LeBron personally about the specific play that I'm going to bring up here in a moment. That's the macro. But the micro is this. I didn't understand those reviews either, to be totally clear. The first review, LeBron was daring them to review it. He's like, yeah, review it. And I tweeted like, well, okay, you're going to lose this review. I was shocked they won it. The second review, D'Angelo Russell does get hit in the face. That's undeniable. Now, what they said is he got hit in the face after the shot had been released. That is flatly, right or wrong, an adjustment in how they have been calling that then over the course of the year. You can argue like that this
same
should
thing
be
as the landing space, right? Like that's the, after just, the shot.
That's after still, the shot, but that's like to protect your ankles. But the point that I'm making is this, DeMonze. Neither of those reviews have any chance of being successful during the regular season. Neither one. Now, during the playoffs, they are like the refs, so be it. LeBron's real frustration, and he didn't mention it, was not on the dunk, but on the layup he hit to give the Lakers the final basket of the game for the Lakers, I think. Let me look at it. What was the final basket of the game for the Lakers? Was it the D'Angelo bucket or was it LeBron's layup? LeBron's layup.
LeBron layup.
He gets hit in the head and he is screaming, demanding an and one. He gets hit in the head and doesn't get it. So he's pissed. And yet, all of that matters. All of it matters because if going into the final possession, instead of it being tied, the Lakers are up one, they do everything different. So I understand the general frustration, but calls do tend to even out, right? The Sixers are going to say they don't because of how the game ended. I understand that. But let me talk to you about the replay center thing for a moment. This is the macro. Let me ask the room. I want to ask the production room. Not the most important. the most important game LeBron's ever played is the 45-15 and 5 game 6 before he'd won a title, down 3-2, the blueprint game in Boston. He had 30 in the first half. They had just lost three straight. It was coming off the Mavs series. From that moment, that is the line of demarcation of LeBron's career. It could have gone one way. He played one of the greatest games ever played, and the most important game of his career came through. And from that moment forward, he went title, 36-13, and or I'm sorry, title, finals loss to the Spurs, 36-13 and 9 in the finals loss, 3-1 comeback, finals against KD's Warriors, injured title. That's what he did after the 45-15 and 9. What is the best game LeBron has ever played in his career? Anyone want to grab a mic and say what it is? Because one game should stand out above all else, if anyone wants to guess. And I'll give context on why I'm saying this in a moment. Daniel, I know you're reveling in the Nuggets fandom. I'm putting you on the spot. Do you have a guess?
Honestly, I'm hearing different things in here, but game 4 when he had 40 points last year as old man LeBron is the most impressive I've seen. I know that's not what you're looking for though.
Okay. That's not what I'm looking for. Matt, do you have a guess? Go ahead.
Game 1 of the 18 finals.
50 points.
That is correct. It's not only the greatest game LeBron's ever played, it's arguably the greatest game anyone's ever played in NBA history. It was LeBron, J.R. Smith, injured Kevin Love against the apex Golden State Warriors. LeBron in that playoffs, prior to that game, had 7 40-point games in the playoff run, had just come off back-to-back 48-minute games against Boston, down 3-2. He had two buzzer beaters in that postseason, one to beat the Pacers, one to beat the Raptors. It was apex somehow LeBron in 2018, so in year 14 or 15, whatever it was, had channeled something he had never channeled before. And that game against Golden State, which is forever remembered as what? The J.R. Smith game. He had controlled every aspect of the game. So why am I bringing it up? And again, I'm not trying to betray confidences, but this is something, and I never talk about this on the show. I think it's the first time I've ever even acknowledged this, but it is something that I actually discussed this play with LeBron personally. And don't, by the way, social media folks, don't clip out this certain moment. If somebody else aggregates it, that's fine. I'm not trying to like clout chase off that. I just want to give you, I want to give the audience context.
Clout chase.
And the play is this. Okay? There is, and I'm trying to find the exact moment in it, but anyone that saw the game, the situation is this. The Warriors are up 1 with a minute left. LeBron drives to the basket, gets fouled by 2 people, makes the layup, makes the free throw. And all of a sudden, the Cavs have the lead with 45 seconds left, and they just got to hold on. And LeBron takes a charge on Kevin Durant. They call it a charge. And it is going to be Cavs ball, 36 seconds left, up 1. The best game of LeBron's career, the best playoff run of LeBron's career against arguably the greatest team ever. He's going to steal home court. And the referees go to the review center to see if LeBron was in the restricted area. He was not. And they verify that he was not. But because they went to the review center to review that, they then opened up the Pandora's box to review anything. And they said, oh, he was moving slightly, which was not a challengeable play and was not an auto review. But because they went to review something erroneously, they then were like, well, let's look at this. And they switched charge to block. And KD hits both free throws. And then, by the way, then LeBron makes a layup. Steph gets an and one. George Hill makes a free throw, miss a free throw. JR timeout, whatever, overtime loss. That was right when the NBA was really embracing replay. And that is a six-year burr in this guy's saddle. So now, once again, replay is being, he feels, used improperly. It's driving him crazy. And so, say what you will about that game. I don't think I'm blaming the refs. I actually don't think LeBron is specifically blaming the refs. Embiid was very mad at the refs and was, obviously. But that is the context for that conversation there. And so, you know, the short version is this, DeMonte. I said Lakers in six, and in order for it to be Lakers in six, they got to lose twice. So I'm halfway to a correct prediction. Let's get to the next game.
All right, so any other day that the Lakers weren't playing the Nuggets in their first round of the playoffs, this would have been the first topic. But here we are. The Sixers are struggling with the Knicks. It came down to a final shot by Brunson, or a final shot by DiVincenzo, and they obviously have been dealing with injuries. So is it time to finally listen to the Bodega Man and believe in the scrappy Knicks team, or is this more of a Sixers problem?
Listen, that was a... That's a great Photoshop. This is why people should watch on YouTube. That was actually... I'm more worried about the Sixers recovering emotionally than I am the Lakers for two reasons. One is the Lakers, at no point did it feel like that Lakers game was over. Even up 20, it was too early. You know what I mean? For any NBA game these days, up 20, you know, is up 20 in the fourth, you know it's over. But up 20 with a quarter, you know, with early in the third, that game is not over. And at the end of the Lakers game, it was clearly in the balance, right? It was back and forth, back and forth. I did think when LeBron hit those back-to-back threes to go up eight that they were in real good shape, but at no point were the Lakers certain they won. When you're Philly and you're up five and the ball is loose on the ground and there's less than 30 seconds remaining, you feel like you've won the game. And then the confluence of events of Brunson front rims a three and it goes in. That is, you know, and this is where sports can be cruel, and this is where I feel sick for my pal Daryl Morey. The last big time playoff shot that I saw get front rimmed and bounce in was Kawhi's game winner against the Sixers and Daryl. And now Brunson hits that, but even there, okay, you're up two, you're okay, and I know Nick Nurse was like, I called timeout. Man, I've watched the tape. Nick Nurse does this thing, the old, do I want it, do I want it, and then pulls it back when he thinks it's getting inbounded. And then when he does start definitely calling timeout, the ball's loose. Now, did Maxey get his jersey pulled? Did he get held? Should there have been a foul? Sure. But that happens. And it was...
Did you not say that's a 50-50 call, right? You got to not look for the foul and get the ball to your teammate instead of looking for the foul there, huh?
Well, so here's the thing. He was trying to... He didn't... I'm talking about before they inbounded it. When they're passing it to him, he gets his jersey pulled. So he's not looking, you know what I mean? Like, he gets his jersey pulled, which is just, you know, that can happen, though. But that's also why you probably just call timeout right after they make the shot. Calm everything down. We're up two. We can inbound from half court. You can always get it inbounded from half court. You can go in the back court. Let's calm down. And they didn't. And that is an excruciating loss. And The Knicks, man, I honestly think that might have been the best win in the Garden since Larry Johnson's four-point play, which, by the way, believe it or not, I had a framed Getty image picture of that in my house growing up, and in our first house we ever lived together. It's like an overhead shot at MSG when Larry Johnson has the four-point play. I think that was probably the best moment in Madison Square Garden in a big spot since then. And it is, you feel sick for Philly. Embiid is playing on one leg and still, I mean, I don't even know how to like put in context what Embiid's doing, because he is clearly injured. He clearly doesn't trust his leg. And yet he has, you know, 34, 10, and 6. And Maxey played out of his mind. The Knicks, man.
And also might have been in his head a little bit to not take that last shot, I think, given that the turnover, the block layup. I get Embiid's the guy, but I kind of felt like Maxey should have taken a three there. But that's just, I don't know. He gave it to Embiid in a kind of nasty spot. I think he had enough space or created space when he drove down. But yeah,
I don't disagree with you. But it was also, here's the other thing on that. There is a weird psychological thing going on when you're down three and you know the other team might want to foul down three. Which is like, I'm not describing this properly, but you can't run a normal frenetic offense because you're not totally just focused on let me get to the best spot possible, because it's almost like you're playing a game of tag. Like, I need to make sure I don't get close enough, right, for someone to foul me. And so if I take time to try to, you know, get to my spot and gather, they might foul me. So I go and then pass it quick. Like, it's a weird thing on the up three. I don't want to get fouled. I know the other team might want to foul. So those spots are brutal. Those spots are absolutely brutal. Where Maxey, it's hard to say he's screwed up, but the play he wants back is the full court layup. Down one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When they give it to him, he has the full burst of speed, and Hartenstein, to his credit, tracks his ass down, and great play. Great play by Hartenstein. And so I don't think Philly's dead. I want to make this clear. You're never dead. The only time game two is a must-win game is if you are the home team and you lost game one, okay? You can't go down 0-2 at home. That typically, not always, but typically is a death knell in this league. Down 0-1 on, down 0-2 without home court, right now we have had 11 NBA playoff games held. Home teams are 11-0. And so, if you can get over the emotion of how you lost game two, if you're the Lakers or the Sixers, you go home, win game three, and then here's what does happen when you fall down 0-2. You then all of a sudden have back-to-back must-wins, right? Like you have back-to-back must-win games, which is a tough spot to be in.
You get that momentum.
And so I think that, here's what I think. I think that we are going to know from the Sixers by the end of the first, by the end of the, midway through the second quarter in game three, whether or not this thing's going to be 2-2 going back to Philly or whether or not they're going to get swept. If they look like a team that is emotionally drained and the Knicks punch them in the face early, they could fold up shop.
Embiid looked shell-shocked after that game. He's looking pretty distraught.
And I also, listen, I think there's a level of, if you're Embiid and you're an injured player, or if you're LeBron and you're the oldest guy in the league, of, man, I only have so many all-out effort games in me. I need to steal a game and then give myself a margin of error, you know what I mean? And have a, I don't want to say a coast game, but a game where, hey, if we get hot from three, awesome. But if not, I'm going to recharge the batteries here. You know what I mean? Type of spot. Yeah. And now they don't have it. Like, my guess is, had the Lakers won that game, what you would have seen is game three, because you have 2 days of rest, another all-out effort game three to go up 2-1 if you're Los Angeles. And then game four for LeBron, the day between, a little bit of a margin of error, a big distribution game, right? You know what I mean? Like, hey, if we steal it, we steal it, up 3-1, amazing. If not, we'll take 2-2 with Denver. Embiid's a little different because he's not orchestrating the offense, but I want to see how Embiid emotionally recovers because he was beside himself. Also, you got to keep this in mind for Embiid. I mean, the guy's never been past round two. So, like, these are, it is hard to put in context of, like, oh, it's only game two of round one. Like, he hasn't played a ton of games, as crazy as this sounds, bigger than the one last night. So I do worry about Philly a bit. All right, let's quickly get to Luka, and then we're going to do torch passing stuff. Yep.
So your large Slovenian son filled up the stat sheet, but could not get the job done in game one. Also, this is a Kawhi-less Clippers team. Is Luka as good as you say he is, or is something going on there? He also has Kyrie Irving on his team.
That was a bad game by the Mavs. There's no doubt about it. It is amazing to me how many folks all of a sudden think that the Clippers are dangerous now because they're like, oh man, if this is the James Harden they get moving forward, it won't be, guys. James Harden has the playoff reputation he has, not because he's bad in every playoff game, but because he is unspeakably bad in the biggest spots. Not because he doesn't have a few great game ones or in where he can look great. I don't believe in the Clippers. I do believe in the Mavs. The Clippers were the home team. Luka was fine, but not great, which, considering he had 33-13-6, speaks to the player is. Now, Kyrie was extraordinary, and we got to see what level Kyrie can stay at, but I'm not worried about the Mavs. All right, that was a great 45-minute first block. There is something that might happen in the next 10 days in the NBA that I don't think folks have fully recognized the gravity of. I will explain it, and this, unlike the stories I told, this next thing I'm doing, I do want us to push out on social in long form, because I think it could be the story of this postseason. We'll do that next. Take a quick break. Right back. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome back in. What's right with Nick Wright? All right, so DeMonze, let's get to the changing of the guard part of this, because I don't think people understand exactly what could be happening in these NBA playoffs. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, it's still early, but the guard is making their mark on these playoffs while the older guys are starting to show their age. And the younger guys are definitely letting them know about it. Is this the final year where the debate over which group of guys runs the NBA is still a thing?
Well, so here's the thing on that. And this is the part that I don't think people have fully wrapped their minds around. Dumonze, what do you consider like really old in the NBA? Like, what do you think is like, wow, like that is an old, give me an age.
It's probably
what do you think really
right?
old is? Okay.
35 for NBA?
Really old is 35. That is correct. What do you think kind of old you have, you know, early 30s?
31, 32, you're right.
All right, you nailed this. So I am going to go through every single All-Star, either this year or previous All-Star, in order of descending age, okay, that was active in the NBA this year as a real big-time player, okay? The oldest, 39-year-old. And I'm just going to give you their age. This is Basketball Reference, so I think they sort it by their age on January 1. Okay, so some of these guys maybe have since turned a year older, but their age on January 1st is okay. The oldest, LeBron James, 39. While I don't want it to be true and it's not the pick I made, the odds say his season ends in 10 days, right? Or less, okay? The next oldest, Chris Paul. He's not playing right now. Keep going. The next oldest, Kevin Durant, is 35. He might be 36 now. Again, no, 30, again, these are their ages on January 1. Kevin Durant, 35. His season could be over 10 days. Steph Curry, he's not playing anymore. Russ, maybe his season keeps going, maybe not. He is obviously, you know, a different version of himself. DeMar DeRozan, 34, not playing. Jimmy Butler, 34, not going to play in this postseason. James Harden, 34. By the way, every single Clipper is going to show up on this list. We'll see. Dame, 33. Paul George, 33. Clay, 33. Out of there. Kawhi Leonard, 32. Not healthy. CJ McCollum, not even All-Star, 32. And that's the list, guys. You could include Drew Holiday, who's 33, but Drew Holiday's also like, you know, the fourth or fifth guy on that team. Here's the point I'm making. If we want to extend it to 31 or older as of January 1, Kyrie Irving would be added to that list. Here's my point. If the Clippers get bounced, we are going to be in a spot where every single top-level player left in the postseason is either a super young guy, prime of their career guy, or just turned 30 guy. All of the old guard could be gone. Steph, Clay, Draymond already gone, right? The Clippers, PG, Kawhi, Russ, Harden, I think are going to lose this round. LeBron, on the brink. The Suns, Kevin Durant, on the brink, right? The NBA, I think, has done a poor job marketing this next wave, but this next wave is about to hit everybody in the face. It is about to be a Anthony Edwards, SGA, Nikola Jokic playoffs, where the old guys in the playoffs after round one could be Giannis. Dame is obviously on that list, and Dame is, you know, an older guy. That he could be the oldest relevant guy remaining would be Dame. And then after him, it would be guys a hell of a lot younger than him. Like, I don't even know if I mentioned, again, age at January 1, LeBron 39, down 0-2. Chris Paul, 38, didn't make the playoffs, or didn't make the real playoffs. KD, 35, down 0-1. Steph, 35, didn't make the playoffs. Russ, 35, we'll see. DeMar DeRozan, 34, didn't make the playoffs. Jimmy Butler, 34, injured for the playoffs. Harden, 34, we'll see. Dame, 33, maybe the one bastion of it because he's the one guy who got attached to, right, one of these younger stars. Paul George, 33. Klay Thompson, 33, didn't make the playoffs. Kawhi, 32, injured. And then Kyrie Irving, 31 on January 1st. So think about it like that. The playoffs are going to be where Kyrie Irving is the elder statesman left and Dame. And that's it. A league that has just leaned on the I was looking at it via draft classes, which is what's so crazy about this. Like, so on this list of old guys, so to speak, are guys from the 2012 draft, like Dame, who was the sixth pick of the 2012 draft. So if you do it by draft classes, this is what you get. Dame 2012, 2011, Kyrie and Klay and Kawhi, 2010, Paul George, 2009, Harden and Steph and DeRozan, 2008, Russ, 2007, KD, 2006, nobody, 2005, nobody, 2004, nobody, 2003, LeBron. And so, like, there, LeBron, by the way, came into the draft 10 years, or came into the league 10 years before some of the old guys now. Dame's an old guy. LeBron came in 10 years before Dame. But it is the new generation in the NBA's here, man. And it's going to be a weird playoffs if all these guys are out of there. It's going to be fun. Like, it is. Go ahead, DeMonte.
No, I don't think. I don't think any of these guys will retire over the next. I think this is a conversation for two seasons from now. Because I don't see any of them. I mean, you're obviously more savvy with the stuff than I am, but I don't think this is the year. I think not next year's playoffs, but the playoffs after that is around the time.
I don't think they're retiring.
Oh, you're just saying the skill level.
My point is this. We have to recognize where we're at. Right now, the Celtics have a middle of his meaty part of his prime, late 20s superstar. Tatum, great team around him with another late 20s wingman. The Nuggets, middle of his prime, late 20s superhero with another middle of his prime, late 20s guy as his wingman. The two kind of X-factor teams, right? The Sixers and the Bucks, they're X-factors because they have injuries to their superstars. Late 20s, or in Embiid's case, I think just turned 30. You know, prime superstars. I'm leaving somebody out that it's going to bother me that I just thought of, but now I can't. The Knicks. Middle of it, mid-20s, entering his prime, budding star. The Timberwolves and OKC, early 20s, not yet to their prime, future superstars. That's who's here now. And it is a miracle that LeBron still being here is insane. Take LeBron out of it. The point I almost wanted to make is because LeBron's 39, it skewed everyone thinking that Steph and KD and Kawhi and Harden and Russ are younger than they are. They aren't. Those are the really old guys.
He also probably is forcing those guys to stay in the league a little bit longer than they might have intended to.
Well, it is going to be like there is a level of like when you look at it, when I was going through these draft classes, like it is. And then we can kind of speed run through the rest of the show. But it is funny to think about like LeBron's draft class, which was an all-timer. Like how long has it felt that Carmelo, Bosh, and D. Wade have been gone? Because those were picks 3, 4, and 5 from Bron's class. The class after, 04, it was Dwight and Iguodala were the last men standing. I mean, but that also, just to give some context, you know who also was in that draft class? Luol Deng. Like, how? When was the last? Luol Deng came into the league 1 year after LeBron. The 05 draft class, Chris Paul still hanging on for that draft class, but the second best player in that draft class, second and third best players, were Deron Williams and Andrew Bogut and Andrew Bynum. Think of the last time you thought of Bogut or Deron Bynum. Deron
Williams. Oh, I mean,
Deron Williams. I've been out of the league. Exactly. Deron Williams, who was awesome, has been out of the league since 2017. It's 2024. That's the 05 draft class. 06. The best players from the 06 draft class. All right, so Kyle Lowry hanging on. But you know who else was in the 06 draft class, DeMonte? This will bring a smile to your face, man. Your favorite player.
One of your two favorite players. Rondo or Ray Allen?
Rondo.
Rondo. Okay.
Rondo. Rondo was the 06. Rondo came into the league.
Was he left 2 years ago?
A year ago? Well, yeah, but he really left a while before that. You know what I mean? Like Rondo technically played for the Cavs in 2022, but his last super relevant season was with the Celtics. I mean, he did help the Lakers.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, he did help the Lakers. I give him credit. Rondo's 3 years after Bron. And 1 year before Durant. Like, Durant's contemporaries are Al Horford, who is an old man, Mike Conley, who's having a nice role, you know what I mean, with the Timberwolves, and Joakim Noah, the same draft class as KD. Joakim Noah. So it's just the old guys have held on way longer than to be expected. This is where I remind everyone, Michael Jordan's final playoff game with the Chicago Bulls, he was 35 years old. He was younger than Steph is right now. He's the same age Durant is right now. Kobe Bryant's final playoff game with the Lakers, he was 33 years old. This is not a mid-30s league, man. Never has been. All right, real quick, DeMonte, let's talk about this Athletic player poll, and then we'll try to do a very fast NFL draft thing.
Yeah, so the Athletic did their annual NBA Anonymous player poll, and it was very juicy, so a few takeaways. The Nuggets and Celtics hold 90% of the votes for the team most likely to win the title. Wimby was voted both number one player to build number one player to build around the best defender. LeBron inched closer to stealing the GOAT crown from MJ among active players. What stood out to you the most?
Okay, so that's the answer. So this is where I just tell everyone, sorry, guys, I won. Sorry, but I won. And by I won, I mean kind of the face of the media side of this campaign. This poll was done 5 years ago, DeMonte. It was 73% Michael, 11% LeBron. 5 years ago. Poll was done last year. 58% Michael, 33% LeBron. Massive gap. Poll done this year, 47-43. And sorry, Mike, but, you know, winning those NASCAR races ain't gonna spread out the gap much. And so folks can say it's crazy, count the rings, all this. Time marches on. And as LeBron keeps writing his story, and this is the tweet I had this weekend, which smart people understood what I was doing, which was when Michael won his first title, it had been 22 years since Russell won his last title. Think about that. When Michael won his first title, we were 22 years removed from Russell winning his 11th ring. This year, we are 26 years removed from Michael winning his last ring. So whatever, if you're old enough to remember the 90s, whatever you as a kid thought of the Bill Russell era of basketball, you were closer to that than we are right now to the Jordan era of basketball. And while the other guy is still out here playing and competing, it's not going to end. Here's the other thing that's going to end up happening. For the next 20 years, every big accomplishment, every postseason record, every time a guy has X amount of anything, and they show the all-time list on all these categories, it's going to say number one LeBron James. And sorry, but MJ's not going to be on those lists because he didn't play long enough. And people are going to see, oh, wow, look at Kevin Durant. He just moved into X place on the all-time playoff scoring list, and first will be LeBron. It's like, oh, wow, look at Chris Paul. He just moved into X place on the all-time playoff steals list, and it's going to be first place LeBron. It's going to be like, oh my goodness, look at Wimby in 18 years. He just played his 250th career playoff game, and in first place is going to be LeBron. And so, yeah, this is probably the last poll that
they need to have taken. You in parentheses like Nick Wright on the outside of the graphic. Okay.
This will probably be the last poll that is taken where the Jordan has a lead. And them's the breaks, y'all. All right, I'm going to call an audible. All of these NFL draft questions, let's do Thursday morning. Thursday morning is the draft. You know what I mean? Keep all of this and the graphics we've built for it. We'll do those Thursday morning. Let's take a quick break, come back, and answer some listener questions before I get out of here. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, save $30 on the American-made steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in. What's Right with Nick Wright. Let's get to some listener questions, DeMonte, before we get out of here.
Connor Walterman said, why didn't Darvin Ham use a challenge on the LeBron foul on Murray late, and why take two timeouts home with you?
I definitely would have challenged the foul on Murray, if not to win the challenge, but because you had two timeouts, and I thought at that point in the game, resting would advantage the Lakers, and I felt like it was a questionable call. I also would have taken a timeout before that final possession just so LeBron and AD could get a breather. I'm not going to kill him for it. It seemed like the Lakers were on board with it. I definitely would have challenged, so I agree with that. But because now maybe they didn't want to let the Nuggets make a defensive adjustment, but I don't think they were going to. So I agree with that critique. All right, go ahead.
Caleb W. asked, with the assumption that Jokic wins this year's MVP, could you make an argument that he's a top five center of all time? Got a Photoshop.
We have a Photoshop. Okay. You definitely can make the argument. So the right now, let's say Jokic didn't exist. the five best centers ever are Kareem, Russell, Wilt, Akeem, Shaq. And the Akeem, Shaq, some people would have Shaq, Akeem, Akeem, Shaq. If Jokic didn't exist, number six on that list is definitively Moses Malone. And then after that, it's kind of a pick your, poison's the wrong word, but pick your favorite. You know, David Robinson has a case. I don't really want to do George Mikan, but George Mikan, I guess, you know, we want to go real old time, has a case. How do you, what do you consider Bill Walton? You know, those are the, that's now the waters you're swimming in. Then you get to Ewing and those waters and things like that. Jokic is past Moses already, in my opinion. He passed him this year. If I don't think winning this year's MVP is enough for him to pass Shaq or Akeem, even though they each only have one MVP. Winning this year's MVP and the championship, you got to start to have some real conversations about it. Now, I'm an Akeem over Shaq guy. I know a lot of people are a Shaq over Akeem guy, but Jokic is now in the discussion. Oh, here's the Jokic Photoshop. I think Jokic should do more media stuff. I think he's funny. All right, next.
Blorin asked, what are your thoughts on late drafting teams trading out of the first round of the NFL draft Thursday? An example, Niners, Kansas City, etc.
I think it depends on how it falls, but yeah, there's almost always value and it's almost always smart to trade back if you can. I did my official mock draft 4.0 yesterday on the show. People can check it out on foxsports.com. All right, last question.
Austin Tapp asks, does having a radio background instead of a print background make any difference of getting an MVP votes? Everyone on TV who wants to have a vote does if they have had a column.
Yeah, so yeah, the print, it is greatly slanted to like print journalists were kind of godfathered into the voting system, which is fine. Listen, I don't, you know, Fox is not an NBA partner, so it's going to be hard for me to get a vote. Now, you know, they're the Ringer, which does great work, they're not an NBA partner, and they have multiple votes, you know what I mean, for that outlet. So do I think I deserve a vote? Sure. Do I care at this point anymore? No. Like, it just is what it is. And then what's the last question, Demaze? We just asked.
Keys, I've been married for 2 years. Can we still get a gift?
I don't know. I mean, you can send a request to the store, but probably not. And by like, this was, you just caught me on the right day, Trey and Dalen. I hope you enjoy those air tags. All right. I got Kylan today. Then I have the TV show, busy week. Demonze, you do have really good, like not, how do I say this? You have, if I were sitting in the seat you're in for Clippers Mavs, I'd be pissed, but I think you're gonna love them. So they're really there. I got you really good seats given I think different expectations, but your sideline lower level, they're good seats.
Let's go.
They haven't shown up in my inbox yet, but they're purchased. So you and I'll talk, but go enjoy. Who are you rooting for in Clippers Mavs tonight?
Honestly, I gotta say, like, I'm pretty 50-50 on both teams. I don't dislike either team.
You're rooting for the Mavs.
I'm rooting for Luka.
You're rooting for Luka. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. All right, talk to you guys later. What's right? Hey, thanks for watching. If you're still here, do me a favor. Hit the subscribe button, then hit the bell so you can be notified when we have new episodes. After you've done that, one more favor, go to your favorite audio platform of choice and subscribe there as well. Don't forget, We're live every Tuesday and Thursday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern-ish, 10:35, 10:40. It sometimes changes, but that's why you hit the bell. You hit the bell so you're notified. You subscribe so we can get to 200,000 followers. We're right around 150,000. We'd love to get to 200,000, get Demonze another plaque. So like, subscribe, rate, send a rating too. Do all that cool stuff. Thanks, guys.